We're back again with the point from the old beard in the studio.
The old beard is in the house.
In the house. We get an early sound of the end of the podcast club for the new.
It wasn't even the beer, but beer. New old beard.
You're making whatever sound you want right now.
I'm so excited. The old beard's here.
I know. It's so good. And
his beard is trimmed.
It looks good.
Looks good. The old beard is looking good.
He looks good.
He looks like he just came back from the woods.
Yeah, he was
probably had coffee in the woods today.
Oh, that's when he did his whole sabbatical. I'm sure of it.
Yeah,
he was just chilling in the woods.
Hammock. I heard there was a hammock.
Oh, there had to have been
hammock, coffee, the woods. Oh, you know what's good is when you have a hot cup of coffee in winter and the steam's coming off of it.
Mm.
I mean, it's just something says that's right.
It sounds really
good.
The
world is right.
I don't like coffee at all, but it sounds good for other people.
Well, you can do a tea. You like tea?
No, tea's gross.
Hot chocolate?
Yeah, hot chocolate's great.
Okay, have hot chocolate in the morning.
Well, welcome to the Heights Unedited podcast, a podcast featuring real conversations about real life where we dig deeper into the weekend message, as well as answering your questions on faith, culture, and life. I'm the Bald Eagle.
Not just faith, not just culture. But also
life. All of it, dude. All of it. Your questions on Oreos. Like, that's going to happen too.
Yeah. Anyway.
We got a new flavor of Oreo.
Did you introduce yourself as? The Bald Eagle?
I am the Bald Eagle. We still don't know who you are.
I'm just here.
We got the beard. We got the Bald Eagle. And we got this guy over here.
Steam on the coffee.
He's sipping his coffee. We do want to thank all of our viewers and listeners.
I'm the sound engineer, apparently.
I engineer
sounds.
You do not at all. If you would love to rate or review the show, let us know how ridiculous we are. We would love to have
old beard already. That's
all you've been going for this whole time. That's what you've been trying.
He's here.
If you do have a review for us, we'd love to read that on the show. We don't have any reviews to read right now, but we do have is just a lot of emails in our inbox telling us how appreciative people are of the show. It feels good when they say that. I like it.
It feels very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
We're not going to read those here, but thank you for the encouragement that you guys have been sending.
I got a text.
Do appreciate
was encouraging
that.
After the last episode, if you didn't hear it, we talked about a lot of stuff. And one of those was the role of women in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody sent me a text.
Yeah.
Saying it was good.
You know what I was happy for too is anytime we talk about anything that could potentially be controversial, I always check the comments on our YouTube and there was none.
None.
No comments.
Okay.
Good or bad. So either they left the church already or they just were okay and there was no negative comments.
Okay, if you're going to leave, be that person to leave like the rage comment and then, slam the digital door.
Don't do that. Just don't. That'll ruin our day. But
I don't know if it would. It might entertain our day.
Yes, maybe. Could possibly.
Then we could talk about them on here and it's unedited. So
you know what's going to entertain our day? Some Oreos.
I think I know the answer to this one.
So I think it's an original flavor. However, this is the white fudge covered Oreo.
Yeah.
Little winter theme here. Little Christmas theme, if you will.
A little winter.
Yeah, a little winter wonderland in an Oreo form.
So I talked to this couple.
Okay.
Post service, the parents of someone on our safety team, and the next week they had Oreos for us.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I talked to the person that has brought us two or three of our flavors so far: the tiramisu, the toffee crunch, like the good ones. She's on the right track. Like her taste, her palate aligns with ours pretty well.
Good word.
And she was like, "I found another one." She's all, "But I heard you guys say you don't want anymore, so I didn't get it." And so she didn't. Yeah.
Oh.
So
I already ordered like 15
You're
other
the
types.
Culprit. Yeah. Here you go. Okay, so
they're anonymously showing up.
Here you go. White.
No, I do like
covered.
I do like white chocolate. I am a fan.
Okay. Well, we'll see how this goes then. White fudge covered. It's a regular Oreo. This because it's out of the category of regular Oreo.
You smell it?
Smells very white fudge.
Wow.
Wow. You really do enjoy the white fudge covered. So here we go. This does not fall into the category of any of the others because it's not a regular Oreo.
So like we're not rating it.
We're not going to place it in the line of the others. We can still give all of our opinions.
What if it's better than Posty?
Not possible. Which, by the way, Mr. Old Beard, who's back. Since you've been gone, I think we've...
Since you've been gone.
I knew you were going to do that, actually. We have consistently every week had a different Oreo. and none have even got close to Posty, just so you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Toffee Crunch was up there.
It was good, but not, I mean it was number two, Posty. But it still wasn't Posty.
So, okay, here's a question for you. The person who, this should be melting and it's not melting. Should I be concerned
you
about
should.
The fudge?
Yeah, it was, I felt a little bit. That's why I set mine down.
Oh, look at you.
Because I knew you were going to talk more so before we ate it.
So bad. The person who gave you the Toffee Crunch tiramisu.
Mm-hmm. She works at Upside. She's a youth leader.
Have they tried Posty?
I'm not sure, actually. I haven't had that
conversation with her. I'd be curious because their palate's good. Yeah. I'd be curious if their palate agrees.
I will ask her at youth on
Wednesday.
Maybe
they should be a show.
We'll see. Yeah.
We'll make them eat all the Oreos.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because we already know.
We already know.
Okay, here we go.
Here we go. You go ahead and give me a taste because you're going to like this more than me because white chocolate's not necessarily my fave, but you love it apparently. So the crunch is very crunchy. I'm hearing it. Are you hearing it in the mic too? That's good. Everyone's hearing it right now. So we still have not developed our vocab besides crunchy. So that's all we got right now. What do you got?
It's good.
They're the man of many words. It's good.
I think what's interesting is definitely white fudge. You definitely get the, if you like white fudge, that's your thing, right? But then you also get the chocolate from the cookie that makes it feel like a good blend to have together. But what I'm not getting is the Oreo filling. Yeah. It gets lost in the fudge. Does the fudge taste like it actually the Oreo
really,
filling?
I really like that.
It's good, huh?
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. I would say it's definitely different than a regular Oreo because of that. Like the white fudge kind of takes over.
Yeah.
But enough to where I'm like, that challenges a regular Oreo, you know? Like it's pretty good.
I think it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Probably a lot more calories.
A lot more.
Which, you know, we're always concerned about here on the show.
You know?
That's why it feels like a lot more.
That's a long way from
last week. All right. Well, thank you for those of you who have donated Oreos to us. And we kindly ask you to refrain from donating anymore because, man, too many calories.
You're officially shutting it down.
No, I'm trying to. But, you know, we'll see what the people do. The new Oreos could be maybe just have a show without Oreos.
Okay. Talk about sports again?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool?
I miss talking about sports.
We used to. Okay.
Speaking of sports, yesterday was awful.
Yesterday
for my Steelers.
Yeah. Yesterday was awful for your Steelers.
Pain.
You and I, the people want to know, we both lost again in fantasy, in case you're wondering.
Shocker.
Shocker. Since we've won three games all season.
Oh my gosh. It's so bad.
You know what I did? Actually, when I noticed I was going to lose again, not surprised, not
shocked
at all.
Did you check me?
First thing I did was go check your score to make sure you were losing too.
I do the same thing.
That's hilarious. As long as we both stay at the bottom, then it's okay.
If you would have been winning, I would have been, I was so sad.
I know. I'm like, gosh, I'm losing again. And I look and I'm like, oh, John's is in. It's okay.
John's getting destroyed. It's great. Yeah,
it's great. Wow. Nothing like the support of another fellow believer.
That's good.
It's good.
It's good. Misery loves company.
We got some questions coming in. Okay. This is an anonymous question that was submitted that said, what has been your biggest joy and biggest challenge of being a pastor this past year? And how are you taking this into the new year? So as we're wrapping up this year, what was your biggest joy?
Biggest joy.
And what was your biggest challenge of being a pastor this
These are hard
year?
Questions for an Enneagram 4.
Yeah, you...
Because you're essentially asking me to get in my feels.
Please do. Shed a tear on the pod.
Oh man, biggest joy as a pastor. It has to be what's going on in our church family and seeing the amount of people come to faith. I mean, it just has to it never gets old. Baptisms never get old. And then to see, so that's probably a good way to explain it. So seeing people step into faith for the first time, like crossing, as we've talked about, that chicken line of faith, is such a massive celebration.
Right.
You couple that then with people taking steps into baptism. So they're growing in their faith. But then you look at what has happened in the discipleship, the one-on-one discipleship realm, the amount of people that have stepped up and said they are willing to be trained to take somebody through it. You see the amount of people wanting to grow in their faith at that level. And so holistically, you look at the church and you go, it's a joy to see people stepping into faith. It's a joy. If you take the role of pastor as a shepherd, right? It's a lot more fun to lead sheep that are excited about going to the pasture versus you got to go climb the mountain to find the one that's over the edge type thing. And it feels like it's been a season of the sheep are genuinely excited, right? Like people are so excited for what God is doing. And then you couple that with March, right? So I'm going on sabbatical in April. Was it April? I don't even remember anymore. Yeah, April, May, June. Mm-hmm. So I was going on sabbatical in April. In March, we were like, man, we need to secure the youth spaces because the numbers were just compounding so quickly that it was like to look at those spaces and go, they're inadequate now, right? H2 is probably the biggest, well, not even that. You look at the commons and mm-hmm. there wasn't even a sound system.
Right.
And poor old Noah and his team were trying to corral students while on the floor with them. And there's no stage, no nothing, right? So to see the church in March in 1 month with no notice step forward and hit the goal of 275, that's just incredible, right? To raise $275,000. And now in December, you know, hopefully this week the build outs are done and we set up the new school or set up the new year halfway through the school year and it's good to go. So you look at that and you go, that's probably the biggest joy of it all. What was the other part?
The biggest struggle or biggest challenge, I guess it says challenge.
This is going to sound weird. Onboarding after sabbatical. I went through probably a month and I don't even know if I talked to anybody about it, but I went through a month and a half, maybe 2 months of really questioning, do I want this scale anymore? Do I want this rhythm? Do I want the weight? Do I want, can I handle?
Right.
Right. Like I felt like there were days when, I would go home and internally I was just absolutely drained. And so then you project, right? Okay. Is it a stamina thing or you project, is this what it is now? And can I even get to where I need to be able to do what I do?
Yeah.
I think that was probably the biggest challenge in the sense of having to trust God to go, okay, you haven't called me away. You haven't moved me. Then you got to provide what's needed inside of this. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was super hard. What about you?
Yeah, I would say the joy piece is really saying the same thing you did and just saying it my way is like, I feel like we are seeing the Holy Spirit move so much. And like, there's a lot of ministry that you do and you just don't see God moving. I mean, you know that God is there, you trust God and you're doing it, you're showing up, you're being faithful, but seeing God move is like, you know, when Paul talks about some scatter the seed, some water it, some see it grow, you know, all of that. And when you're doing those things, there's a lot of work involved before you actually see any fruit or you see any growth or you see anything happen. And I feel like this year we've just seen the Holy Spirit move and we've seen a lot like in the spaces that I get to hands-on see is like youth and young adults and things like that, man, it's just like incredible growth that we're seeing. And not just numerically, but spiritually and all across the board. It's just been really
cool.
Just a hunger. And it's been really cool to be a part of that, just to see that. Like you said, buy-in of people that are wanting to step in, wanting to go deeper, wanting to have more, like just all of that to see God move in that way has just been definitely a joy for me being a pastor this year. One of the joys just personally for me is being able to step in when you were on sabbatical and spend more time being able to teach. I love teaching. I enjoy getting to do that and being a part of the process of all of that was for me a huge joy this year and just all of that. And then you know, on the other side of it, like, the challenge is there's just so much weight that you carry in as a pastor that compounds, and you don't necessarily realize the areas that you're not healthy in until you hit like a big, like, uh-oh, you know? And for me, I found myself at a point where I'm like, man, am I at the edge of burnout? Like, I've never burnt out before. It's just like, and it wasn't one thing. It wasn't even two things. It was just a bunch of little things that stack up: difficult conversations, life situations, frustrations, busyness, all the things that stack up to the point where I'm like, am I going to burn out right now? Like, this is a lot.
Is this how it ends?
And yeah, is this it? Like,
yeah.
And it was a recognition of, okay, there's a lot of things that I need to be healthier in order to stem off the burnout and make sure that doesn't happen. So, you know, challenge wise, and I think that's a constant thing. It's not like, man, this year was unique. It's like every year that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And just the, you know, I guess the unedited conversation that pastors have, like, this is really hard. And, you know, advice for anybody who's considering going into ministry is like, man, if there's anything else you can do that would fulfill you, do that instead, because this is not, I mean, it's literally the hardest thing.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, not to leave that on a downer though.
Or do this with better boundaries.
Well, yeah, but if you can find a way to do that, that'd be great. Teach me.
I think that's the hard part of the pastoral life, right? It's not a job you get to shut off.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you're, especially in today's age, you're a text away. Right. So what I mean by that is you can be sitting on Thanksgiving break and in the middle of something, and anyone that has your number, right? Or you're only one person away, so they get your number from somebody else or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, your Thanksgiving is now interrupted by crisis in somebody else's life.
Yeah.
And so it's that, yes, it's the weight of the formal ministry. It's also the weight of, how do I care for people? How do I keep healthy boundaries of the limits that God's given me while being, and we've talked about this before, you know, they say you can have 150, right? Like, acquaintance relationships. And that's what we were designed for. Well, we're in a church family that exceeds 150 by a lot,
yeah.
Right? And so how do you maintain healthy expectations for people that, yes, you want to shepherd well, they want you to be their pastor essentially, right? And yet you can't do it for everybody. So yeah. So how do you keep those and then not let it be a spiral? So it is that interesting thing of boundaries play a big part of it, right? And accepting limitations and being willing to let people down, and then that carries its own weight, right? And I think working through all that, and that's not even the piece of, like you're saying, all the burnout pieces of just the physical job.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's where it comes back to call. It's got to be a call, right?
Right. Exactly. And that's what, I mean, we've said that on here before too, but man, if it's not a call, like, it's not worth it if it's not a call. You know what I mean? Like, you're just, it's not going to be worth it. So, but not that, none of those things, those are just challenges. That's what the question was, but that doesn't overshadow the joy. That's why we're still doing this. Not only is it a call, but man, we see the goodness of God. We see the joys that come through ministry because of the goodness of God.
Yeah.
We see God moving in miraculous ways, which are just incredible. And it's been a great year for that.
And that's what we're taking into the new year, right? Like, that's what
we're taking in.
That's the excitement. That's when you look at the new year and you go, man, I can't wait to see what God does. I can't wait to see where this goes, right? Like, I can't wait to see what he's got planned around the corner for our fam.
Absolutely. Okay, second question we have for us before we hop into the weekend recap, kind of a little bit of a weekend recap, actually. This is a question that was not submitted. It was a question that I heard asked multiple times and has been asked over the years. So I figured, why don't we discuss it on the podcast? So you may have noticed this weekend, as you were sitting before service started, we were playing Christmas music. Now, as people listen to that, they realize and recognize that not all the Christmas songs that we play are distinctly Christian Christmas songs. They would fall in the category of secular Christmas songs.
Okay.
And people come up that are inquiring or upset about the fact that we are playing secular Christmas music in a church. why does Heights play secular Christmas music before the service in the church?
Should we talk about secular and sacred?
Do what you want to do.
No, we can say that for another time.
Okay.
But I think you've got to, like, for us, the reason being is we're aware of context. Context matters. And what also matters is who's going to be in the room, who's going to be in those spaces, and recognizing that everything we do within a service is geared towards faith, is geared towards sacred, if you want to put that word in there, right? Like it's not taken from the secular world, so to speak. It has this faith origin, this biblical, this worship, this liturgy to it. It's very insider church, and it should be. Like, I'm not saying that's wrong. What you get with pre-service music, especially at Christmas, we know that there's more visitors that will come during Christmas, which means that there's more people who are, if you want to use the word, unchurched, right? Like they're not, and by unchurched, I mean they're not familiar with church culture. So right. they're geared in a Christmas culture because of Christmas is why they're sitting there in the first place. And a song comes on they recognize, right? That's a moment of them feeling like they belong. That's a moment of lowering walls. That's a moment of engagement for them that they may not experience in the entire service that we do.
Yeah.
Because once the service rolls, there's a good chance they don't know any of the songs. They don't know the verse references. They don't know, like this weekend you talking about Esther. They don't, who's Esther?
Right.
What's a book of the Bible? Right. Like, and so there's just this thing of if we can use a Christmas song that, let's be honest, when you go to the store, you're all going to hear, right? And so by you now having it in that setting, we've lowered a public space to go, you belong here. They feel like they're part of it way before you get on stage and begin to speak. Those walls have already come down, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think if there's a Christmas song that is overtly against Jesus, we're not playing it, right? Like there's not, now for the majority of Christmas songs, 98% of them are not that.
Right.
They're just lighthearted, fun, Christmas-oriented songs around Christmas. I think for me, I was discussing this with somebody yesterday that had brought up the same thing, was like, hey, what, you know, why do we play these Christmas songs that aren't Christian per se in the church? And, for me, I'm like, well, are you listening to them outside of the church? And I'm like, well, yeah, of course.
Right.
I think a rule for me is, man, if you're not going to do it if outside the church, you shouldn't do it inside the church and vice versa. You know what I mean? Like there's not a distinct, this is a sacred space, therefore I can do it outside, but I can't do it inside.
Right.
That's living a dual life.
See, now you just
took
us straight into the secular and sacred because all of life is sacred.
Well, and that's what I mean though, is if
all of life is worship,
whatever it is. If you wouldn't drink that, eat that, smoke that, do that, whatever it is in your life, if you would not do that inside the church, you probably shouldn't do it outside of the church.
Right.
And like, genuinely, that's how I live my life. I would be comfortable with anything I do outside the church, doing it inside the church building.
Right.
Because I'm not going to compromise both, you know, either way.
Right.
And I just think that is a good rule of thumb there. And I think people that would, why would we do this here? Well, do you do it outside? Well, of course I would do it outside. Well,
right.
Then something's got to change. Either you're wrong for doing it outside or, you know, so
yeah,
that's where I see that discussion going apart from just the very practical of what you're saying of, hey man, people feel more comfortable here.
Yeah. And I think people they only look through the lens of themselves.
Yeah.
Right. So they only look through the lens of, I have a problem with this versus looking around the rows around you and go, what does it mean to that person? Right. So there's a very selfish agenda to it. There's also a reality of, and you can't get away from it. It is that we have things that we go, this is more sacred than something else, right? This belongs to the world. This belongs to the church. Well, when you look at the church as people and not a building, right? Because take Heights, for example, that building could easily become a warehouse 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. Right. And not even for bad reasons, not even like, oh, the church collapsed and we don't, like, literally, we just moved to a new location.
Yeah.
And that building can become a warehouse, right? So something that we went, oh, you can only play inside this warehouse, you can only play Christian songs, right? I think that's where it breaks down, because you're trying to say this space is more holy, and Jesus did away with that, right? Like Jesus made all spaces holy. Mm. Why? Because the temple of the living God goes every single place a believer goes. Mm. So all of a sudden, to your point, right, we don't sit on our couch and go, the temple of God is here. This is a holy space. So therefore, because it's my couch at my house, I can do whatever I want, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. That yeah. I wouldn't do in, because when I get to church, oh no, that's holy.
Yep.
So anyways.
Well, hopefully that answers for anybody who has a question.
We could go
question.
On that for a while.
Yeah, we're getting a little fired up there. All right. So weekend recap, we started kind of a new collection leading up to Christmas. This is our Advent season, which is preparing ourselves for Christmas, which is good news.
Good news.
So we're preparing as a church for the good news that is going to be shared. And so we talked about looking at the people around us, and if good news is coming, who in our life can we share that good news with, or can we get there? And one of the things that was said this weekend is we need to start looking at our circle as our assignment. How can we start looking at our circle as our assignment?
I think it's a change of mindset, right? Like it's a change of, not to bring up the last conversation, but even in the last conversation, it's a change of the way I look at those spaces. Yeah. And I think it's the change of the way I look at my life. That if my life, and as you talked about so clearly at the start of your message, the kingdom mission, when I see my life as on mission, that means all aspects of my life. That means going out to eat, the people around me, right? Like that means going to school to pick up my kids, the people around me, the whatever it happens to be. Well, then you've got this closer circle of whether it be your extracurricular, like sports, those kind of things, right? Like, or it's your dance group, or it's your whatever it happens to be. Those spaces now are the circle I choose to put myself inside of. And so when I'm on mission, now I start to go, okay, who here am I on mission for?
Yeah.
God, who've you got me connected to, and why? What does this mean for the kingdom? What are you calling me to do? And so it changes. I think the mindset changes when I see myself as we talked about call up top, right? When I have a holy calling, that holy calling goes into every area of my life, not just, okay, when I'm at church or I'm assigned. That's how it used to be, right? Like you're assigned to go knock on this person's door.
Yeah.
Right. Versus going, no, actually all the doors of my neighborhood are my assignment. Which ones does God want me to go knock on, right? Like, what does that look like? Which neighbors is God calling me to have a different relationship? And so anyways,
I would say that that's why this weekend was important, is it's identifying who's in your circle.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we get just so, it's our life. We don't think about it with intentionality.
Right.
And it's like, well, yeah, I see that person at work every day.
Right.
No, hold on. Let me stop and think. That's a person that I could invite to church. But you just didn't even think about it before, because we just, everything is, just status quo, I guess you'd say, instead of really thinking about it. So I think the way that we start looking at our circles, our assignment, is even identifying that you have an assignment and stopping, pausing, and, you know, hopefully this weekend, writing those names down like we, you know, had challenged people to do gives you a little more focus on seeing your circle as your assignment.
So I worked landscaping when I was 21, 22, and we were going to be missionaries. We had to get out of debt before we could continue on, and we needed a home church. So we were in Prescott, and during that time, I was just working as a landscaper. I was a tree planter, and there was this Emory Riddle student that would join me in the afternoon to plant larger trees. We would go do it together. And again, I'm on mission, right? So yes, I'm planting trees, but I'm looking at anybody around me, whether it's the person I'm planting for or whatever. Well, this guy I got talking to started to realize he's from a Christian family, not walking in his faith, and just felt like, man, I'm supposed to challenge him. I was supposed to walk alongside him, right? And it wasn't long before, to get him out of his living situation, he ended up living on our couch. Mm-hmm. And he was there 2 months. We were in a one-bedroom apartment. It was tiny.
Oh, boy.
And he's living on our couch, right? Because it meant that much. This was the assignment that God had given, right? Yeah. Like if I'm not willing to do it here, then I'm not going to be willing to do it overseas, right? Yeah. Like just because I have a title or a tag or whatever. And so I think it's that mindset of going, I wasn't around a lot of people then, because when I go plant trees, it was often by myself. This guy was the constant. And it was like, okay, God, what are you doing? I had the privilege of doing his wedding, and we're still friends to this day.
That's like, awesome.
It's just one of those that you go, okay, God, I don't know what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And he had a bunch of valid reasons of why he was struggling in his faith at the time.
Yeah. Man, that's so good. One of the things that was said this weekend is statistics that maybe could have glossed over or could kind of impact us. One of the statistics was this: is 80% of non-church goers say that they would go to church if someone they knew invited them. Why is this so significant?
It's so wild.
Yeah.
It is so wild. Like if you take that at face value, right? So what, 4 out of 5 people? Is that 80? I'm terrible at math. Yep. So 4 out of 5.
Eight out of 10.
8 out of 10. Let's do it easy. Yep. 8 out of 10. Right. So you look at your circle, and let's say your circle has 10 people. I'm sure there's more, but let's say it's 10.
Yeah.
8 of those people are waiting for you.
Yeah.
Right. And because hopefully you built a good relationship, right? This is the other piece. Like if they know you to be the jerk that hates Christmas music, guess what? They're probably not going to want anything to do with anything you do, right? Yeah. Like, so there's a piece of this where it's like you're building relationships intentionally, and it's the bridge of that relationship. So to the end of your thing there, if someone they knew, right? Like, do they know you? And are
it's not
you,
a cold invite. It's, right. You know, they're waiting for someone they know to invite them. Yeah.
Right. They're not down. It's not you walking Whiskey Row and going, okay, I'm going to pick 8 people. And no, it's people that you know, right? Yeah. Like people that you've hopefully built relationships with. Mm-hmm. And that to me is amazing.
Yeah.
That if you invite them, if you personally put the invite, they will say yes.
And that's what, so I think challenges our insecurities and our fears, because most of the time we don't invite because what are they going to think of us? Yeah. What are they going to say of us? They're going to say no. And we answer for them and, or we answer for them in our head.
We assume, right?
Yeah. And so then we don't ask.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to say no, so I'm not going to ask. And it's like, well, statistics actually are in the other way, like heavily that they will say yes.
Yeah.
You know? And I would encourage anyone.
And if you ask the first 2 and they say no, then be excited. You got 8 left that are going to say yes.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. I would encourage you that if you do ask somebody and they say no, you just got unlucky to get the no first, but
go
ask.
Just like my
next
fantasy football team. Yeah. Right? We got the losses out of the way.
Yeah. From here on out, it's going to be good. I wish that's how it was working. Another statistic that was brought up was this: is 1 of 4 Christians, is actually 27%, so a little more, but 1 of 4 Christians say they don't know any non-Christians. Mm. And 80% of Christians say that they don't have any close relationships with non-Christians. Why do you think this is true?
I'd be really curious the age of the people they put on this survey. And the reason for that, I think the older you get, 2 things. The older you get and the longer you've been a Christian, the further the drift becomes. Mm. I think what I mean by that is when, you know, you've got younger kids, you're automatically forced into community spaces.
Right.
Like it's just natural. Like kids go to school, you're going to be at school events. You got kids that are interested in sports or whatever activity, right? Like that's going to be what you're doing. And so there's this natural, I go where my kids go. But then as you get older, now you're choosing where you go. You're choosing who you go with. And so the friendships you have, and it's supposed to work this way, right? Like we have Christ in common. We should be able to develop a deeper relationship.
Yeah.
And so with that, because of Christ being in common, we've probably got more shared experiences. And the more shared experiences you have with someone, the tighter the bond.
Right.
And so I think there's a natural by age. You think of high schoolers, right? High schoolers naturally are going to know. I think of my daughter right now, right? I don't think any of her friends know Jesus. And that's just because she's in public school and those are the kids that are surrounding her, right? It doesn't mean she doesn't know any other Christians, but it means that her close friends are ones that don't know Jesus. So for her, really easy to fill out that piece of paper, right? Yeah. Like she's got names, no problem. The older we get, the further I think we get removed from circles that naturally put us in contact with people that don't know Jesus. Yeah,
that's very true.
And so we have to fight against that. We have to find probably, if that's you, I would say, you've got to go, and this probably answers the second part, like how do you fight against it? You've got to go, okay, what am I interested in? And I'm going to put myself out there to join a pickleball club, right? Like for the purpose of being on mission.
Yeah. Yeah, I have two examples of friends that are pastors that have done this. Is they recognize, like, man, my work is people in the church. Mm-hmm. My circles are people in the church. My groups are people in the church. And so they recognize that they, you know, had this eye-opening experience to go, I don't know if I know anyone who's not a Christian. So they intentionally put themselves in it. One specifically, he joined a softball league. Mm-hmm. And he enjoys playing softball. He didn't play baseball growing up or anything, but for him, he's like, yeah, it's something I can do. And he doesn't know any of the people that he joins. It's a random assigned league and none of them are Christians.
Yeah.
And he's the one pastor on the team and he just does it. And he's been doing it for years. So he has a relationship with these people. And so he does that. Another one that I know, he has the capability to have a gym at his house. He could get all the weights and do it, but he intentionally, and he doesn't even have time. He's like, I don't have time for this, but I'm intentionally going to go to the gym so that I can be around people, make friends, and get to know people that don't know Jesus, and I can invite them to church.
Yep.
So I think it's just the intentionality of going, oh man, I do need to put myself. And so it means stepping out, right? Yeah. It means not being comfortable. I think it bounces back to the generous life we talked about, where if this life is all about you, then you're not going to want to sacrifice your comfort. You're not going to want to sacrifice your convenience. But if it's not about you, you do want to live the generous life. Part of that is going, I'm going to intentionally put myself in a place that, you know, I'm sure that the Thursday night softball league is an inconvenience for him at time. I mean, I know that going to the gym and not, you know, is an inconvenience for that guy. And it's like, but dude, he's doing it intentionally to be around other people that he can have an influence in, right? Like you can't shine a light. Like if I just turn the flashlight on my phone on right now, we're in a studio with a lot of lights. Right. You're not really going to see it.
Right.
But if I go into a dark room and I do the flashlight, it's going to light up the whole room. And that's what you putting yourself as a representative of the light of Christ into a dark place is going to do.
Yeah. And I can hear the people, right? The people that fight back on that of, well, you better be careful because it's a slippery slope. If you put yourself out into an unsafe softball league, like, you know, that whole side, that's a spirit of fear.
Right.
We weren't given a spirit of fear, right? We were given this spirit of power. And with that, we were given a mission. And so I think we just have to be bold to go, to be honest and go, okay, where do I need to grow in relationship to those that don't know Jesus?
Yeah.
And some of it, honestly, I don't know if this happens as you get older. I'd love feedback from somebody, but I feel like heaven becomes more real.
Mm.
And hell becomes less real.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's because you're closer to heaven at that point, but like when you meet somebody in their 20s who meets Jesus, they're like, everybody has to know. And you use Craig Groeschel this weekend. Right. That was Craig's story.
Yeah.
Right? Like Craig was like, I just got to tell everybody. If this is true, I have to tell everybody. But for some reason, the older we get, the more complacent we get to share the gospel.
Yeah.
And yet it's really simple, right? Like it's my parents and their living situation and realizing around them because of where they are in life and because of following Jesus the way they have, the apartment complex they're in has put them around a lot of unsaved people. Mm. And so what was my mom doing this Thanksgiving? She was collecting food to share because they were doing a potluck. She's like, we're going to go because we get to...
Yeah.
They know their neighbors, but they also get to share Christ in a practical way. And so I just think it's being aware of these tendencies exist. How do I fight them?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's super good. Well, I'm excited for the good news of Christmas. I'm excited for
it's gonna be so good
as we move forward to it and just all the things that we're doing, people sharing their good news stories.
We got some amazing stories. Just
really cool stuff that we're doing with that. In the Advent process, which is preparation, that's what Advent is, preparing for this good news to be shared and what our role as a church is, identifying our circle, and then in the next few weeks, walking through what that looks like to invite them.
Did I hear you say this weekend that it's a sin to not know anybody?
Yeah, it was pretty hard I heard statement. That one. Yeah.
Did you get any feedback on it?
No, not yet. I was expecting. I know I was going to hurt some people's feelings when I said that. But the truth is what is sin? It's missing the mark, right? What's the mark? It's God, right? So obedience to God. So if God has called us, if it's a command in scriptures for us to reach people for Jesus and we're not doing it and we've intentionally removed ourselves from anyone that we could possibly do it with, you know what you've done? You disobeyed God. You've missed the mark. Mm-hmm. That is sin. So, you know, it's a hard statement to say. I knew that I was going to upset some people.
I've never heard somebody say it that way, which I thought was good.
Well, thanks.
Well, I think it's good to your point, right? To your point of it being a command, go and make disciples. And the go is anywhere you go.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's not a specific, oh, those missionaries over there, they're the ones that are supposed to do it.
Yeah.
It's no, as wherever you go, disciples of Jesus, make disciples.
That's true. Well, Mr. Beard, how are we doing on time over here?
Oh, we asked the time.
We got the exact time.
We
okay.
asked the time.
I think we got time for one more quick question.
Quick question.
Here we go. Last one. It was submitted by Anonymous again. What's the best way to share Jesus with an atheist? Would you even try? What's the best way to share Jesus with an atheist? And would you even try?
Okay, this one feels like the sacred versus secular. In the magnitude, we could spend a ton of time on this.
We could, yeah.
I think it depends on what
Mr. Beard told us what time we're at.
We got 4 minutes.
Yeah, we don't have a ton of time here. So
I think your definition of the gospel,
okay,
if it is as narrow as I'm just going to tell you about Jesus, death, burial, and resurrection, right? If that's what we mean by gospel in this context, mm-hmm. or are we talking the holistic gospel, the entire meta narrative? Right, like the we're talking about the whole scope of who God is, his redemptive qualities, his character, whatever. Right, because I think you can share the gospel and parts of the gospel with an atheist without getting into it only having to be this very narrow. This is the only thing I care about you hearing. Mm-hmm. Right, that's the first thought. Is just gospel's a big word. Another thought would be, I think the best proof that Jesus is real is by life change that you've seen. And so I think telling story is where I would start.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can't deny, like if you sit here and you go, my life was changed forever. I used to be this and now I am this. And the only catalyst to that is this person of Jesus. Then all I can tell you is my life is better, and what you perceive of that, you've got to reconcile why it's better, right? So I think the beauty of this is being able to not feel like I have to do this one thing, but going, okay, what would be, for somebody who doesn't believe in God, what would be something that would even maybe push them in that direction, maybe even get them to think that there could be, maybe challenge, create a question, right? Yeah. I remember the book I think was called I Sold My Soul on eBay, and it was an atheist that auctioned his soul on eBay. And you could bid, whoever won, he would go to the churches. I think that's how it went. I read this book like 2 decades ago. So whoever won, he's like, you can pick 5 churches, I think it was, and I will go and attend those churches. And so he went to one of them, and the guy was sitting with him in the back room. I think it was the back room, and he's sitting with the pastor, and you know, the pastor's expecting, you know, this is going to be, you know, this, or that the atheist is expecting this is going to be a fight, right? Like he's going to try and convert me, you know, that whole thing. And he said, all the guy did was just push the door open. And he goes, let me tell you about that couple right there. He goes, they've adopted, and I don't remember the story, 3 kids. And here's why. Let me tell you about that guy over there who's experienced this in his life. And he just went through people that were in front of this guy who was an atheist and goes, that's why I know this is true. Mm. And just kind of left it, like mic drop, and loved him, treated him really well. But he goes, I'm not here to argue facts. I'm not here to try and twist, change, whatever. But what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, similar for me, man. There are so many logical questions that an atheist has to answer, that we all have to answer, but that an atheist has to answer. Question of existence.
Yeah.
God doesn't exist. If there's no powerful being, if you are denying the existence of a higher power, how did we get here? Like, there's some very basic questions that have to be asked and answered to an atheist. However,
and that leads you to a great conversation about faith,
right?
Because if they have another version, that requires faith,
right?
So now you're on common ground of faith to even talk about.
I think of the book that I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. It actually takes more faith to believe that we came from nothing than from a all-powerful God who created everything.
Yeah.
But just in general, there's a lot of questions that have to be answered, and there's a lot of logical debates or conversations that could come with an atheist. However, most of my interactions with somebody who is adverse to faith or atheist, I just simply ask him at the beginning, hey, is there anything that I say today that could change your mind?
That's good.
Because most of the time the answer is no, because they don't want to actually get the answer. There's something deeper that they're dealing with. Atheism is a mask for something else that's broken. It's something else that's hurting, something else that's going on. And the craziest thing you can do with somebody that goes, man, I want to debate you on your faith or whatever, is say, hey, is there something that I say today that could change your mind? And when they say no, go, oh, okay, hey, you still want to go grab lunch? That's going to disarm them, because then they're going to go, wait, you still care about me? Even though it's not about an argument on faith or not, or God or not, or whatever. Yeah, I still care about you. I still love you. Still want to hang out with you. We'll still have fun. Like, showing the love of Jesus is sometimes the best defense you can give for Jesus. That's what Jesus did when he was here. When we show his love, we do the same thing. Because a lot of times, like you said, they come in looking for a fight. And I think you stand on truth, you stand your ground, but man, you don't have to fight. You can just love them.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best ways.
Yeah. And it's just so simple, right? Because then when you go to lunch, what are you going to talk about? I'm going to talk about my wife.
Yeah.
Well, how long have you been married? Well, 30 years this year, right? Like, it's that's a success story in our world. The only reason.
Well, how'd you make it 30 years?
The only reason.
Because of Jesus.
I'm an idiot. Yeah. Jesus is amazing.
There it is.
You know, I just think we overcomplicate it, and we try and put it down to, now don't miss here. If a person comes to you with genuine questions, answer the questions, talk about them.
Yep.
But if it's, you know, this person is an atheist and you feel like you have to get them to a certain point, your job is to be faithful, to show up and love them. That is your job. Can you do that with your words? Yes. Do you do that with your actions? Absolutely.
Yeah. One other quick thing I would say about that is, I think a lot of times people who are against the church or against God or an atheist or whatever, a lot of them have stereotypes of what the church is going to be. I'm not going to go because I know it's going to be blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Invite them to Christmas, invite them to hear good news, invite them to experience it, because what we do at Heights is designed to make people feel loved. And really, it disarms them from going, but the church is all these things, and they have a list of it. Then they experience it and they go, oh, that wasn't what I thought. These people were actually really nice. These people were actually loving.
Come to Christmas and would you be in our family picture?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, invite them in.
Would you go outside and get a bowl of soup with us? Right. Would you sit inside with us and experience the joy in the room this Christmas?
That right there is going to change people's stereotype of what they think it is. And they're going to leave going, this isn't what I thought it was. Maybe, just maybe, what it's doing is planting a seed. And it's getting them to go, maybe it isn't what I thought. Maybe I should explore it more. Maybe
and I don't remember where I heard this, but the statistics are atheism is in decline. Oh, it was England. I don't remember what the statistics were, but it was a pretty major shift in the decline of atheism.
It's in the U.S. as well. It's pretty crazy. Okay, well, if you have made it all the way this far in the podcast,
give yourself a pat on the back.
Give yourself a pat on the back, and you've made it into the podcast club.
Bam, 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 bam.
There we go.
The beard has made it to the noise. It's still here. It's still here.
Oh, it's so good. Hey, I just want to acknowledge right now to all of our Into the Podcast clubbers, I have made it.
Clubbers?
They're clubbers. I've made it to the end, all the way through the podcast, through John's sabbatical, all the way through the podcast, through David's sabbatical. And we're still trucking episode 54 here, folks.
When your sabbatical comes, we ain't gonna make
it. We're shutting down. Good news is that's like 4 years away still. So we still got time, ladies and gentlemen. And we are so glad that you guys have stuck with us through this episode, being here this far. If you love what you've heard, please share it, rate it, review it, smash that like button. I will say there was no comments on the last episode, but there was 10 smash that like buttons.
Yeah, hit that like. YouTube. You know so who you are. Hit that like button.
Appreciate that. You guys are awesome. Final thought is this. We don't have to separate our relationship with God with our real life. It is one and the same. That's actually what integrity is living the same in all the spaces that we're at. And so when we find ourselves in our life is an opportunity to shine the light of Jesus wherever we are. Thank you guys so much for being with us. We love you. See you next week.
Love you guys.